This
is Phil Farron. And I am driving around, and I'm actually back in the buggy. Back in my dad's car. It seems to have developed more little grunts and groans since I had it down at the auto shop, or maybe I've just forgotten how many grunts and groans it has. But this may not be my daily driver too much longer, but for now it is, and we're just gonna hope that it doesn't get us stuck somewhere. So anyways, it's been a pretty eventful week. Aside from just everything else, we had an unbelievable storm come through. And I'm really just talking about this to put a stake down in the ground to remember that this happened. Goodness. So Tuesday, 28th, 2 days ago, big thunderstorm came through, potential for hail, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, okay, sure. We get those not infrequently. And I'm downstairs and working away and blah, 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 blah. I start to hear some noise and I move upstairs and we're getting golf ball size hail hitting our deck. It's like, oh, okay, this is not good. And it goes on for, I don't know, a minute maybe? I don't know. I mean, long enough that we're taking pictures of it. I've got a picture of our backyard that is just covered in these hailstones. And so I've gone ahead and, you know, put in the request for claims, you know, both for the rock house and for my house. So we'll see what happens there. And, you know, we'll get an inspector out and see what there is to see. Our house is buried in trees, so, you know, as long as things don't come straight down, they got to get through some leaves to get to it, and all that will slow it down a little. But we'll see, you know, we'll just see. My son-in-law did tell me that somewhere along the line, State Farm had changed their deductible specifically on roofs so that it's 1% of your insurance amount when it comes to roof, as opposed to them doing the standard deductible thing of $500 or $1,000. So we'll see. Which I can understand why insurance companies would want to do that, because, like, holy cow, that was not nearly the worst of it yet. So we're about 8 miles north of town. We were golf ball size. About midtown and off to the east, we have some friends that live towards the south, but off to the east. It was marble-sized at their place, but there was a swath across, I think it was pretty much North Springfield, that it was baseball size and softball size hail. I mean, if people were holding them and showing, you know, can only hold like two in their hands. These things were so big. And just the dynamics, when you think about just the dynamics that it would take to keep that chunk in the air long enough to get that big, it's unbelievable. I've heard people saying that this was the worst hailstorm that Springfield or Greene County has ever experienced, which I don't disbelieve that at all. I mean, there were just tons of people who had cars just smashed up. I went out with a buddy to eat Tuesday night, and man, you know, just, it was on the north side of town we went to eat, and just everywhere you looked, you saw cars with windshields smashed or some smashed out completely, and the bodies of the car just banged up. My son-in-law, they have a darker charcoal Tesla that they had bought as a daily driver for their daughter, and it got hammered on its windshield and its back windshield, and it happened to be at praise at the church, which is on the north end of town. And I mean, just everybody that had cars that were on the road, there's multiple videos that have been put on Facebook now of just, you know, people driving along and see the really interesting cloud formations and talking about it, and then it just starts up. Bam, 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 you know. So, yeah, that was exciting. And, of course, there's all of the insurance issues now, and it's, oh, man. So, we'll just see. I did get my first call from the, you know, people looking to make a quick buck, pretending like they know you. Hi, Phil. And, you know, and then, well, we'll just come by and give you an estimate. And whereas I've said, I don't need you to come by and give me an estimate, you know, and to push in and say, no, I am not interested in you coming by to give me an estimate, you know, and finally convincing them that we should hang up the phone. The only reason I answered in the first place is because it looked like it might be from Cox Hospital, because it was a 2 prefix, and but it wasn't, but I got off the phone as soon as I could. So yeah, that was exciting. I'm still not doing any writing at this point, although I'm kind of getting anxious to get started now. I haven't been writing for a full month, a little over. No, longer than that, because I got the beta copies together and got them under control mid-March, so it's been like 6 weeks since I've been doing any writing. So yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to do some writing. But got a few more things to take care of before I get started with that. I think I mentioned that I got the Talk Like Yoda Day costume under control, so we got that done. Did a piddly little bit of work on it yesterday, but I think I'm ready to go for that. Now I've got to get this Illustrated History of Goth costume done. I think this is going to be fun. And I think I mentioned last week that it, of this progression that term has made through starting out talking about quote-unquote barbarian hordes and moving into architecture and then moving into literature and then moving into fashion. It actually moved into music before it moved into fashion, so that's another hop. I may have to figure out how to, you know, pull out that reference in the costume, because I don't have anything for music right now in the costume. But we'll get that figured out. It'll be fine. It will just be fine. So yeah, life is good. Things are going fine at headquarters. We are coming to a better and better appreciation of what AI can do for us, Claude Code and those things. I haven't actually been given Claude Code yet, but that's fine. That the piddly little things that I'm working on, there isn't that much to them, and I can do it faster than explaining to Claude Code what needs to be done. So that's fine. But, you know, one of my buddies today had to convert an Access database to a front-end interface, and he basically had it script out all the stuff that was in the Access database, because there's a way to do it, and then Claude Code just went through and reproduced all the API calls and built all the front-end stuff, and so, I mean, it was pretty impressive. So, and he was pretty impressed when he was, you know, he called me up and he said, look at this stuff, you know. And, you know, so it was pretty impressive. So anyways, you know, it's a new era. And it's just a lot of stuff going on now. And it's changing so very, very fast. But it will be interesting to see where we are 6 months from now. You know, really 2 months from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year. There's just so much happening. And it's going so fast. It's fascinating. It just really is fascinating. And, I mean, the speed of change is extraordinary. So there's a tractor back there, and there's a little farm here, and they're apparently, how you pick whatever crop that was, is they had a trailer and all the people were laid down on the back of the trailer, and then he was moving forward, and then they were picking and throwing stuff in the thing, and then he was moving. So I don't know what that is. I'm sure someone does. But it was kind of interesting to see. AI hasn't done anything with that yet. Although maybe there's already a machine built for that. So yeah, life moves forward. And it is extraordinary times. And more, I am convinced more and more that we desperately need to be on guard and aware and listening for what is happening within us, because it's just so easy for us to be swept away in an emotional moment and not to realize that, okay, hold up. What is causing this disgust in me? What is causing this anger in me? What is causing this fear in me and this anxiety in me? Because that's not of God. And if you follow that, it will only be destruction. But that is very, very difficult sometimes for people to see and to understand. And so you just end up with all of these reactions to things. And it just gets almost ridiculous at times that people are just reacting. When what they really need to do is just slow down. Take a breath. Realize that these reactions within this anger, that it's flesh, and flesh always equals destruction in the end. Always. It always feeds out to destruction. And it, you know, the more I talk about this, the more I really, really like this idea. I'm going to move the recorder here just a bit. It's off center. There we go. I really, really like this idea that the solution to the Cartesian crisis, as Brent Weinstein calls it, the solution to this difficulty in finding truth and meaning, the solution is really within us. That no matter what our stance with Christ, there are going to be forces within us that lead us to love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And those things should be our North Star. Those things should be the thing that we point towards. because the enemies of our soul simply cannot even disguise those things. I mean, I know that the enemies of our soul will try to do things like, well, you should just be affirming of so-and-so because they're struggling with their gender, so you should be affirming. But affirmation is not true love, because true love is willing to speak the truth in kindness and gentleness, even if there's a cost for that. And understanding that every person can't just be affirmed, because sometimes they're making decisions that will damage them in the long run. And that's sad, and that's difficult. But it's really fascinating to watch. So we'll see. God is good, though. You know, God is good. And he guides us and he helps us. I do have a few minutes while I'm waiting for Aiden here. And there was a really good... Yes, it was really good. There are a few times when I was just talking back to the podcast. But again, Brent Weinstein... his podcast, he has a podcast, that he just did and just released called Is God More Than Just a Story? And it was on the Dark Horse podcast. And it was part of his, what he calls the third rail, where he takes on topics that are supposed to be dangerous topics to talk about. And then if you talk about them, you know, people are going to come out of their seats and rage and shake their fists and come after you. And this particular thing was very interesting. Brent Weinstein has been on a journey. And it's fascinating to watch him just sort of come along and see him getting closer and closer to a realization that there is a reality that is demonstrably better than a simple science-only approach or any other religion besides true Christianity. And so this has been interesting to kind of watch him sort of localize down to this in the process. There are still some things that, you know, he said, and I'm just like, oh, Brent. But that's okay. That's okay. It's a journey. In this particular podcast, he had gotten together with Jonathan Pageau and Jordan Hall. I knew of Jonathan Pageau because he and Jordan Peterson have had many conversations. And Jonathan Pageau is very much someone who focuses on symbolism and meaning and allegory and tying that all to with Christianity. He is more Orthodox. I believe he may be Catholic, but I don't know. Jordan Hall, I had never heard of before. But he had an interesting story in that he was very much in the critical thinking, scientific community, just strictly science. And as he has moved along, he has moved closer and closer, and in fact is now, he would call himself a Protestant Christian. He calls himself a Protestant Christian, so... And it was interesting because I guess Brent Weinstein and Jonathan Pageau had a previous conversation that I may have seen some about, but I didn't And viewers had felt like they were just talking past each other. And so Brent Weinstein had asked Jordan Hall to sit in on this conversation and sort of intermediate between them. But they had had previous conversations the night before they did the podcast. And Brent actually said at one point, I'm not sure that's completely necessary, but he said Jordan Hall brings a really interesting perspective. And he did in many, many points. So they were talking about God and what that means. And I highly recommend that you go and that you watch the podcast because it's fascinating. It's worth listening to. Lots of good ideas in it. And so one of the central questions they were trying to address, is God simply a story humans tell or something real in a deeper sense? And right away, both of them, both Jonathan and Jordan, challenged the framing, the idea of real as physical, measurable, and scientific, and story as fictional and made up. And what they were saying was that the distinction might be too shallow to capture what God actually refers to. Because stories shape reality. I mean, there's no question about that. The stories shape reality. And those stories, whether it's laws or nations or identity or money, or those stories are not purely physical, but they are undeniable in their effects. So a story can become real if it reliably shapes behavior, perception, and outcomes. And we know that the religious stories all do that. In addition to that, Jonathan Pageau was making a claim and pointing out that reality itself is structured symbolically. So you see these competitions between forces of order versus chaos. You see how things are organized into hierarchies. There's a symbolism there that is fractal in nature, that the things you observe on a small scale can be true on a large scale. You see things that are valued, like sacrifice. And in the patterns that show up over and over and over in the hero's journey and those kind of things. And that these stories aren't random, but they're maps of deep patterns of living. And Jordan Hall was talking about the fact that we live in a meta crisis, that there are environmental problems and social fragmentation and a loss of shared meaning and institutional collapse. But he was saying these crises are not separate. They stem from a breakdown in how we understand reality. You know, we over-prioritize materialism. We underestimate meaning and narrative and wisdom traditions. Whereas religion historically provided this coherent framework for meaning, and then within religion, people could align themselves to society and reality. And the fact that we've kicked that out means that we've lost our orientation and we're fragmenting into competing narratives. So, getting back to that question of, is God real? Pageau's perspective was that God is not just a being inside the universe. God is more like the source of order and meaning and intelligibility itself. So asking, does God exist? He says we should really ask something like, is there a real structure of meaning that organizes reality? And is that what we call God? And I would say that, that's okay. Jordan Hall pushed that a little further and said, you know, we need a modern language that people, we need a language that modern people can engage with. We can't just revert to old religious frameworks without reinterpretation. So, of course, if you know anything about Brent Weinstein, he really liked that. Pajot would lean more towards traditional Christianity. Jordan Hall was leaning towards a more abstract systems level analysis. He would refer to it as like a religion of religions. Like when you look at all the religions of the world, what is the highest goals of all of them? What is that thing that sits behind everything? And so their conclusions that they came to was that religion may not just be stories, it may be how humans interface with a deep reality. But modern culture has lost the ability to read that symbolic meaning, and so we really need to rebuild that crisis. And a takeaway might be that God might be a character in a story, might not be a character in a story, but the reason that stories have power at all, that he is, you know, the ground of being, is that, I think that's the phrase that was used by some of the, he is the first cause and he is the ground of being. And it was interesting. It was interesting to listen to all that. I found myself repeating to the podcast multiple times, you know, this has all been solved about what this religion of religions is. It's all been solved. How we can construct a society where we can all achieve our best together. This has been solved. All you have to do is go to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And you've got everything there that you need. I mean, it's all there, and it's all difficult. Because it does require, from the get-go, self-sacrifice. But it's there. All the love you need is there. All the compassion you need for others is there. It's all there. And it's interesting to hear Brent Weinstein talk, because he's very much still an evolutionist, and he very much thinks that it frames the world exactly as the world needs to be framed, and he can explain the difficulties that everybody is facing simply through evolutionary theory, because it explains, he feels like, it explains why humans engage in the kind of game theory play that they do. And his explanation is it's because genes are striving and planning to figure out how to preserve themselves into the future. And, you know, every time he would say that, I would just sort of look at the podcast, because I've heard this before. Well, it's the genes. It's the genes. And it was Richard Dawkins, the selfish gene. It's the gene that's just trying to go forward and make sure that it is preserved and it is the one that survives, you know, survival of the fittest, of these genes. But that has always just seemed abstract and odd to me. How do the genes do that? They don't have any input. You know, they don't seem to have any neural capability. And I'm sure there's been something explained away, well, the genes produce the type of mental systems that then try to pursue, you know, and so it's like somehow these genes manage to stumble on something that could calculate enough that it could then be influenced in a way that genes would be passed on. And it just seems like you're starting with the thing that is supposed to be carried around and carried forward. And then you're asking that thing which is supposed to be carried forward and protected to design its own mechanism to carry it forward and protect it. And it just seems like you kind of have the cart before the horse. Because if genes are only interested in propagating themselves into the next generation, aren't they the end result of that propagation? And don't you need to set up the machinery to do the propagating before you just take these genes and form them and throw them down on the dirt? Because I don't think they're going to get propagated unless they have all this machinery around them. That's sort of a critical path. You have to have the machinery in place before you start propagating the genes, because the genes can't propagate without the machinery. And, you know, from that, I get back to my old thing of, yeah, you can say evolution, but every time you say the word evolution, I'm going to replace it in my mind with designed for adaptation. And the reason is, from a perspective of designed for adaptation, it means that at least at the same time, all the mechanisms needed to propagate out the DNA and respond to changes to the environment and changes to the DNA itself, all that machinery was simultaneously brought into being along with the DNA. So everything's working. I don't see how it works if both the genes and the mechanisms to propagate the genes don't form simultaneously. Because if the mechanism to propagate the genes forms before the genes themselves, then the mechanism has no way to pass on its genes. And so all those quote-unquote machines just cease to exist. And there isn't enough time to develop the genes. And if the genes exist before the machines, they don't have time to duplicate themselves either, because there's nothing there to carry them. So, you know, it is very much that chicken and egg problem. And I, you know, the whole time he was saying that, I was just like, And the other thing about this argument that, okay, all of these things that we see happening in the world, all this selfishness, all this cruelty, it's just because we're operating within lineages and, you know, we will only protect our own and others are a threat and all that stuff. There's a very simple name for it from the Christian belief system. We call that flesh. And it is the flesh that's responsible, and it is the flesh that drives people to these kinds of things. And there are many, many religions in the world that recognize that there is a force for evil in us and a force for good, a force for destruction and a force for life. And the selfish acts that we see, the cruel acts that we see, the disingenuousness, the anger, the strife, all that stuff, you can work it around and say, oh, this is the genes that are doing these things. But it's just as easy to say, no, there is a corruption within the human heart. And that corruption is beyond what we just see in the animal kingdom, where you've just got animals that are trying to survive. You know, they're in an ecosystem, they're trying to survive. But what is in the human heart is more wicked than that. So it was a really interesting discussion. And Brent Weinstein at multiple occasions did acknowledge that the Christian map, that the Christian overarching map of structures
did have the power to, in his words, redefine the lineage preferences that individuals might have. And Jonathan Pageau and Jordan Hall pointed this out as well. Jordan Hall at one point, I think it was Jordan Hall, said, you know, I'm sitting across the table from Jonathan Pageau, and I know he's much more orthodox than I am, and I'm a Protestant Christian, but that's okay. We can sit here, we can talk to each other, we can debate about things, and I consider him to actually be in the same lineage as I am, specifically because we are both believers in Jesus Christ. And, you know, Brent Weinstein did acknowledge that Christianity seemed to have that power. But then he went on to say, you know, but the difficulty is not everybody is going to want to become a Christian and just, you know, follow the edicts of the Christian church. Yeah, well, that's true. You might find more people if you would just focus on the Sermon of the Mount, on the Mount, and get away from all the buildings and the preacher structures and the offerings and the, all those accoutrements that go along with organized religion. You might get a lot farther along if organized religion hadn't gotten tangled up with governmental structures. You know, but those are all things that have happened. And it was interesting because Jonathan Pageau at one point said, honestly, when we look at Christianity, one of the reasons that Christianity hasn't had an even greater impact on the world is because we as Christians do not actually live up to the life that Christianity calls us to. And that's absolutely true. So it was a good discussion. I would heartily recommend. I have no idea how long I've been talking, but I'm sure it's been at least 20 minutes. Good podcast. Good podcast. It's Brent Weinstein, Dark Horse. It's on YouTube. Is God Just a Story or the Structure of Reality? So check it out. It's worth listening to, and there's a lot of extra little viewpoints besides what I talked about. This is Phil Ferrand. And I have made it home. Well, no, I haven't made it home. I'm about to pick up Aiden.